Hello and welcome in to another episode of Podcast 63. It's season 4, episode 22. This past week we had two very close and, well, not so close on the second one, but crucial games. We traveled down to Peoria to play Bradley, and then on the second game we were at home against first place Northern Iowa. And for those who don't know what happened, we dropped the game to Bradley and beat Northern Iowa down pretty darn good. So we're going to be talking about both those games this week. And then we might, if we have time, get into a little bit of discussion about, Missouri Valley Conference, teams, like end of the year teams. We both kind of haven't looked at, the season statistics for a lot of other players besides our own. And I think it would be kind of fun to just like discuss it as if, you know, we don't really know what's going on. So, we might get to that if we have time, but we'll be talking about these two games. Lou, let's hear your highs and lows from this week. A little more specific than just obviously winning and losing. Like, what was something that you liked what we did, and then something that, that you didn't like that we did?
Yeah, I think I liked one thing was one of the games we'll talk about was consistent minutes from everyone. I think I tweeted it out. The UNI game, I saw such a consistency from defensive minutes, also then producing offense, which I think I got to tip my cap. Kevin Sweeney compared it perfectly. I haven't seen that type of consistency since Atlantis. And even though we lost two games then, they were such a different team there than they have been in recent. One bad thing is that I'll really talk about is boxing out to get a rebound. There's one game particularly that I'll talk about that I think was something that was our Achilles heel. And that's something that I saw that really bothered me and something that's kind of been a quiet thorn in our side throughout the season is kind of getting those defensive rebounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll get into that all here shortly after this break. So thanks for listening. And always remember, never forget, go Blurs.
He jumps. He passes out to Hunter. Hunter shoots off the rim. Brown gets the score. It's over. It's over. We won. We won the ball game. Iona won the ball game. Oh, we won 60-58.
And we are back. So let's go in chronological order here and talk about the unfortunate loss to Bradley. We coming into this game, it had been kind of a little bit of an up and down stretch for us. I mean, you know, we up to that point had two losses in conference. Each time we followed it up with two wins. But, you know, only winning four of the last six, and playing the Bradley team who honestly, even before beating us was red hot. They had kind of figured some stuff out. They had dropped a game to Northern Iowa in the middle, but, coming into that game, they'd won, 5 of 6. And even with, some injuries that they've had, namely they lost, Jayshon Henry. I don't know if he's going to come back. I think he had two concussions in like 2 weeks or something. So I don't know if he's coming back, but he was out. They also had, Terry Roberts, who is one of their transfers, who's kind of their best player, or at least their lead guard. Had a severely sprained ankle and it looked like he wasn't going to be playing, but then turns out he did play. They just have figured a few things out and, Rink Mass looks really good consistently. I think we knew this was going to be a battle. You know, we've had some classic games against the Bradley Braves in our past. There's an incredible meme that has lived on forever, which is Marquise Kennedy staring down Darrell Brown Jr. You know, this is just like a classic Missouri Valley Conference matchup. And on the other side of things, on the non-game stuff, I'm pretty sure Bradley Twitter hates Loyola Twitter more than anything else in the whole world. So there's kind of a lot riding on this game. And obviously, like, we wanted to stay on top of the conference. We were in first place, and Bradley was vying to move up in the rankings. You know, my kind of overall sentiment from this game was it just felt like, I don't know if we were a little flat. I don't necessarily, I know Lou, you're going to kind of contradict me here in a couple minutes. So that's okay. I felt like we didn't do anything terrible. You know, there wasn't any like holes. There wasn't anything that I thought we did exceptionally bad, but there also wasn't anything that we did exceptionally well. Usually, you know, we have a bunch of assists, and in this game, we only had 12 assists and they had 13. You know, another way that we tend to win is shooting well from the 3-point range. We shot just under 35%, which isn't terrible, but again, isn't good. You know, it's not good enough to make up for some other lacking pieces. You know, our free throw percentage was only 64%. Luckily, they only shot 59%, so that didn't kill us. You know, like turnovers, you know, we had 12 turnovers, they had 11, so we're not going to win the game because of that. So to me, it just felt like we didn't do anything horrible, but we didn't do anything exceptionally well. And honestly, sometimes that's more difficult to fix than, you know, going out here and turning the ball over 20 times. You know what to tell your team after that. On the flip side, you know, you can tell your guys like, oh, hey, we didn't do anything that bad. We're going to go out there and play just one step better and we'll beat these guys by 10 or 12. So, yeah, for me, it was just one of those games where I felt like maybe we came out a little flat. Maybe we didn't fight for every loose ball. We weren't diving on the floor as much as I think we usually do. And it ended up biting us in the butt. You know, a couple okay individual performances. Braden had 14 points, was 4-for-9 from three. Lucas had 13 points, 6 assists, and 5 rebounds. Chris Knight had 12 points. But none of those guys were all that crazy efficient. Even Chris Knight was 5-for-8, which is still good, but, you know, we've seen Chris Knight go 5-for-5 or 6-for-7 or whatever. So we know he can, honestly play a little bit better or be more efficient rather. This one was hard. Sometimes these type of games are difficult to watch too, at least for me, because I'm just so nervous and it's an away game and you don't necessarily think you're going to win all your away games, especially against the top half of your conference. But I felt like there was maybe that little extra juice for the guys that might get them going, and it just didn't seem to happen in this game. So. Yeah, I don't know, Lou, what were your thoughts? And please, tell everyone how you think I'm wrong, because I know we talked about this a little bit before the episode.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me was kind of thinking, let's go back, right? Our previous game against Bradley wasn't that great, right? Yeah, we won, but we had to take him to OT and we were down, 16, 17 at one point. And it's like, whoa, different kind of scenario. Then let's even take it back last season. The last game we played them, even though we played them a doubleheader, we had to have Marquise Kennedy step up and go crazy at the end. And I think that's where that meme stems from, and win us the game at the end there. So the last two times we played Bradley have not been easy. There's no way to say easy, right? So I think Brian Worrell knows how to play Loyola, or at least can figure out how to slice and dice our defense, right? The biggest thing for me from this game, I think that Bradley took advantage of, and I'll clearly say it in a minute, and I think we actually did shoot ourselves in the foot a little bit, was just we gave them 12 offensive rebounds. Like, mm-hmm. That is just not a good thing at all. And it's not the fact that, like, okay, someone could go to the box score. They only had 4 second-chance points. But the thing is, think about that. They get a fresh shot clock every time they get the ball back. So that is, like, time of possession gone for us. So to have that happen 12 times – and it's just like that's over 2 minutes if they took 20, if they took a full 20 seconds, even 10 times. So it's just like those are critical things to like think about. And that's something, in my opinion, that we haven't had to worry about too much. There hasn't been a blatantly maybe big enough game for me to see it. But this game I kept seeing we had to, I think at one point Braden had to get in, or even Keith had to get in and just grab the ball off Rick Mass, right? Rick Mass had 14 total rebounds. 7 offensive rebounds. That's just crazy to me. Now, granted, Rick Mass is absolutely a great player that can get in there. But the other thing is Rick Mass is only 6'9". So it's not like he's standing towering over these people. Like, I'd say Chris Knight is a little bit more athletic than him, so I thought he could get up there more. But that's something we saw even earlier, right? Chris Knight wasn't grabbing as many rebounds as we thought, maybe. And maybe Huddy wasn't in there too much to grab rebounds as well because he's not as strong to go up, right? So I think that is the biggest question mark of my performance when – or if their performance when watching. It's like, how did they get 12 offensive rebounds? And I'm not even talking about points out of it. It's just the fact that we lost 12 possessions there. Now, granted, you're going to say they're going to get a few offensive rebounds here and there, but that's a whole bunch of possessions we didn't get. And I think that actually stems a big thorn and big, like I said earlier, it hurts us a little bit more than people realize that you got to play defense again. Like, how tired did Lucas get at the end there? He got pretty tired. There was a few open layups. Now, yes, they were defended. But there were a few layups that I thought he could have finished a little bit better. And quite honestly, I associated to just tiredness. He played 34 minutes and a lot of that was on defense. So that's my biggest thing. I'm not saying Bradley was not a good team at all. I think they're a good team. I just personally think this game, we did more to hurt ourselves with the rebounding that caused kind of snowballed affected in. And then the one thing I think for me that I'd like to talk about is just the surgence and kind of something you shouldn't have been too shocked by, in my opinion, of just, and I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, but Malavi Leons.
Oh, yeah, Malavi Leons, yeah.
Yeah, that's a name that I did not expect to be talking about because, again, Terry Roberts has been taking this team. But then with Terry Roberts' injury, I'm like, oh, shit, this is going to be smooth sailing, right? Terry Roberts out. They won't have, like, kind of that strong score. Like, Rick Mass, we just need to guard him, right? Because then Jayshon Henry hasn't played because of legal stuff and an injury. So it's like, okay, Rick Mass, the only guy we got to worry about, right? And we did play great defense on Rick Mass, except for box it out. He went 2 of 9 from field goal. That is great defense on him. And he only put up 6 points. Now, the rebounds are one thing. But Malavi Leons, I think, had a great – he was 2 for 2 from three. We did not close out the corner three at all. And that's not a Loyola team that one of the Porter or even Drew's now that's on the wall
says, yeah,
close out the corner three. And we just didn't at all this game there. I'm pretty sure if you had a heat map, which I think we might have reached out about for this game. I know we do a few times, but there are a lot of corner threes and just bothered me so much. There was a time where you pretty much pointed to Tom Welch to go cover the corner. And Tom crashed in and didn't cover the corner, and the corner three was wide open for the three. So, but Leon's, JUCO player of the year, I think, nearly, or at least up there. So that's a name I definitely expected to hear in the Valley. Did not expect to hear it against us. But I think his resurgence, us not getting defensive rebounds, and then not closing out in the three are just three kind of dominoes that fell and not in our favor, right? Now, I'm not going to – like, Zeke Montgomery, that is a fluke. I'm not going to say that's bad on us or amazing. He is not a consistent three-point shooter, so that's nothing to be like, oh, my God, we didn't do that. He went 3 of 3 from three. Like, that's great. And then the other bench player, I think, went 3 of 4. Like, that stuff's so out there. I think even us on Sunday took a little luck from three on some things, which we'll talk about. But really the big things for me – and, Buck, I don't know which one you want to maybe tackle – I think it's stemming to maybe the big conversation, but where's the defensive rebounds going to come when we have to play big guys? Where is the box out of or close out of the threes? And then I think we can just both agree that Malavi Leons, or I don't even know, to be honest, I'm not going to have to worry about it, to be honest with you, at the end of the season, so apologies. But I think he's going to have a surgence also as much as Rick Mass for Bradley.
Yeah, I mean – just like in respect to the rebounding issue, I mean, I think it's like, you know, we could kind of speculate all the guards need to crash, but I mean, it's really the bigs, right? Like, it is Chris Knight's job. It's Tom Welch needs to play bigger, and Huddy needs to play bigger as well. The one guy who I will make an exception for is Tate Hall. I feel like we've been talking about Tate Hall since the beginning of conference play, saying this guy needs to get more minutes. This guy needs to play more. Cause he just does so much well. It's not just for points and it's not just for like size or whatever, but he rebounds so well too for his position. And I think we saw that in the Northern Iowa game make a bigger difference. I mean, he did play 19 minutes in this game. So, you know, he got decent playing time, but I think we're talking more like in the 25 plus minutes range. And, you know, if you're playing him over a guy like Keith Clemens or even Schwieger sometimes. like that extra guy who will scrap and fight for rebounds is a big deal to go along with, you know, your big Ugwuok and then Williamson as well, potentially. So,
think for just a last note on the bigs, this game is just really, it's tough to see Lucas have more rebounds than Chris CK. And it's tough to see like guys like Tate Hall. I agree with you. He should be there almost all the time. But the fact that Tate is one rebound less than CK just blows my mind. Like it's like in reality, CK is the big. Like you got to go get the boards. And I don't know if it's just it's tough for him because he's already boxing out. So maybe I get that. It's just kind of tough for me to see that. I do think we've talked about this, that CK isn't, and again, he's not a traditional big. We know that. So then maybe you put out Jacob just to be getting that. I think Jacob did that against the Missouri State game. I think his presence against Cade Prim, he was worried about pushing Cade Prim and putting that big body. That helps with clearing out rebounds, right? Like, I definitely think. And I'm pretty sure CK has only had about maybe four games where he's had more than five rebounds.
And interesting. That would surprise me, but yeah.
Yeah, he's had a few double digit games, which is great. And it's interesting, right? But like the thing is, like, I think most of the time he's gotten some of those double digits is when the team's going small, like a small team like Drake, maybe, right? So yeah, I don't know. It's just something that I think's not been really talked about. And just really interesting. And I think that was one of the biggest things for me. But again, I think you even talked about it, and we got to talk about it a little bit more. It's like Rick Mass and, like, yes, there were other scorers, but I really got to talk about the two, just their presence on the court is Rick Mass and then Mallory Leons. I think those guys, just because of their size, like, what, Rick Mass is 6'9".
So is Leons.
Yeah, exactly. That's my thing. It's like to have two – now, I think Leons a little bit more athletic.
Yeah,
because a little bit, but to have 2 6'9" guys just be that kind of dominant, and the broadcast, they talk about the play. I think Rick Mass turned it over, but he hustled down at the end of the game. Which yeah, tip my cap to that. But again, Leons is a junior, right? Mm-hmm. But Rick Mass is, again, I don't know if he's a sophomore or freshman because of COVID. I don't know. But Bradley, I think with those two guys, will at least next year be, I think, even – and even this year, they still got a season to finish. So I think they can make a bigger splash than people realize, and I realized. It's just a matter of getting a healthy guard out there. I think if they get a healthy guard, those two guys down low can do something interesting. And to be honest with you, I kind of laugh because they have what – is it Boya, the 7'1" guy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I thought Boya might do something, but sadly Boya gets into a little foul trouble, so I think he wasn't that big of a worry for us. But really the biggest things for me – when it comes to those two, it's like just knowing our assignments and our assignments where we didn't close out the corner three and we didn't really box out at all. It was just tough to watch those assignments. And again, this isn't a team you can't just, like, let's be honest. If we handed these opportunities to Evansville, I think Evansville fights back and gets closer to us. But what you can't open these doors of opportunity to Bradley, because Bradley will take them. That's the thing. It's like, I think we gave them more than we should have, and that just added more. Like, they already were playing well, and it's like, oh, Loyola's going to give us this rebound. Sweet. Loyola's not going to close me out in the corner. Sweet, I'll take advantage of this. And those are the things that I think we did hurt ourselves a little bit more than maybe people realize, or even than maybe we realize. Like, and then they just took advantage of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they played well, and then they took advantage of our poor opportunities, both on defense and on pretty much on defense, right? Because it's boxing out is on defense. So, and then I'm not really going to go into it. I didn't see much of it, and I appreciate it on Twitter. But, like, Lucas is getting tired at the end of the game. God bless. I think it's just him trying to do something. It was tough to watch, to be honest with you. It really was for me because I just know that's not like him. But I think it's just you play 30-plus minutes, and it's just been a defensive battle majority of it. So I think that was just a little bit not a nice cherry on top. It was just a really, really tough thing to watch toward the end. So.
Mm-hmm. You're talking just about him being tired, or was there like an incident or something?
A wide open layup, I think he had, or at least he had a move, and then he was wide open to the basket, and then he just missed it. Like, there were just one or two.
I know that happened to Chris Knight. I didn't know.
No,
that
Lucas, I'm pretty sure, drove. He drove and missed a layup.
There was another one where Tate drove, Drew two defenders, perfect pocket pass to Chris Knight, who it's not a wide open layup, but like he should have made it, and he missed a bunny, like an easy layup. So I missed the one with Lucas, or I must have just, you know, clicked back or clicked away for a second. But I think you're right. I think it's just, you know, they're not perfect. They're not going to make every shot. You know, it's a bummer when they miss one that they should make, but at the end of the day, like you said, long game. If anything else, it's fuel for the fire to be better next time. Go ahead.
Sorry. I just happened to find it. And this was a tough, it's last minute 22. Lucas missed a layup in the paint, and then 40 seconds left, he missed a jumper. And it's one of those things that's like, I don't think he should need to worry about trying to put it up. But again, he's not giving up, which I love seeing, but it was like, God damn, I wish it went in. Just give me one shot that went in. But I think it's not even him. Braden missed like two threes, I think, toward the end of the game, or even like we were just trying to make points. And again, it's nearly like we'll talk about you and I, like we were just trying to make something go in. And we've had a lot of luck, to be honest with you. Last Bradley game, the Valpo game, we've had a lot of luck comes. And I think sometimes it's when you can't rely on the last second shots to be the way you get back in. You got to, it's really about how you start. And I think we just can't expect to just always have, oh, the last 5 minutes, we're going to come back from 12. Like that's not something that you can do every game, and that's possible. So I think that's also just the tougher thing is like, we've seen our team come back from so much, and it's like, oh, we can do it. And it's like, it's just not always going to work. So.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Not when it's especially that much, like, yeah, if it's a tie game, that's one thing, or within a point or two, but yeah, we were down, I think, like 7 with 4 minutes left or 5 or something to that effect. And it just,
yeah, I think. Yeah. Yeah. We were down, I think, 3 at one point, and then they just took it. They just went off. Or I think we were down at 3 with like 6 minutes left. Or no. Wow. Geez. Sorry. We were down by 1
at
5:30 left. Jeez. And then I don't think they, yeah. And then they just, I think they went on, let's look at it. They went on a, like 8-1 run. So it's like, nothing you really want to see.
No.
The last 5 minutes we scored, 5 points.
Yeah. It's just not good enough. Like at the end of the day, back to my kind of overall point of the game, it just felt like, you know, it's not horrible, but it's not good enough, right? Like you're not going to win games against, and to your point, you're not going to win games against good teams when you're making this amount of mistakes. You can win against Evansville. You can win against Indiana State. You can win against Chicago State. You're not going to win a game
exactly
like this against the top half of the Valley.
And that's the thing. It's like, especially a team that has, so that's the thing. It's like, I know, and that's the crazy thing, right? Like, we beat Missouri State after a dominant Missouri State performance against us, right?
Right.
And it's like, okay, so a different team shows up against Missouri State. And the thing is, I think this was nearly the same Loyola team that showed up at Loyola that was looking for a way to win, but not setting that tone early. Like against Bradley, we were just looking for a way to win when they played us at home. And this game, it was like we were just handing them stuff that, like you said, it's just, you just can't do it, especially to a team, man. They're running hot. They're trying to finish strong. They're trying to put themselves in a better position for the conference tournament. And again, Brian Wardle knows that, hey, just give me a better seeding and he can do something with it. Cause again, back to back conference championship winners there. So he knows what he's in the last, what they wanted 4 years ago or 3 years ago. So he knows what he can do in the Arch Madness.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So that's kind of at least all I have to say. Final score is 68-61. Definitely a sour taste in our mouth. This just feels like a matchup that we're going to see again. Who knows if that ends up happening? Arch Madness, we've seen crazier things happen, but it just feels like one of those ones where, like, we went to OT at home. This game was pretty close for most of the game until maybe the last minute and a half. And it just feels like there should be a part three. So who knows if that happens, but, that's all I got. So, Lou, any last thoughts on the Bradley Loyola game?
Tough. I hope this is what kind of kicked us in the ass a little bit, for the UNI game, which we're talking about. And really also sets the tone for, we got to finish these last games strong. That's what I hope this does for the team.
Yeah, if nothing else, this game kind of gave us direction of, like, what we need to do at the end of the season in order to achieve the things that this team wanted to do. And this is probably, you know, going to this Northern Iowa game, We knew we couldn't, there's, if we drop this, A, we're probably what, in like third place potentially. Northern Iowa's in the driver's seat to win the conference. There's no way in heck we're getting an at-large bid. And it puts us in a really tough spot, even just for seeding in Arch Madness. So this game at home was just so incredibly important. Our offense, had, you know, has been kind of up and down, I would say, the past few weeks. Mm-hmm. Like we mentioned, kind of good wins at Illinois State, Missouri State, tough game at Drake, tough game at Bradley. So a lot was riding on this game. There's a lot of pressure, not to mention, I mean, I want to talk about this a little bit, but I'll mention it here in a second. The whole, the Loyola Project thing that was going on this week. There's been thoughts in my head about, like, is this a distraction or is this something that's good for the team and kicks them in the butt and, you know, gives them something to, like, play for history, play for these guys that, you know, broke barriers and all that kind of stuff. The reason why I didn't want to dedicate a ton of time to this, to the Loyola Project, is because we want to dedicate a whole episode to it eventually. And it feels like something that deserves more than us talking about it for 10 minutes before we talk about games. So we'll eventually dedicate a whole episode. It'll probably come shortly after the season's over. But the reason why I mention this is because it happened this week and I was worried that it might be a distraction. Turns out that that was not true and that the Bradley loss coupled with, you know, whatever was in the Gatorade that morning, put our players on the right path to playing extremely well. We won the game 85 to 58. Honestly, it really wasn't all that close. Even in the first half, like, we kind of jumped out to a pretty sizable lead about 10 minutes into it. I think we were up 15 or so. And then if it weren't for two, Northern Iowa 3-pointers, going into half, we would have been up close to 20 points. So it was a completely dominant game. I don't know if there's any other way to put it. AJ Green had 18 points in the first half and he was their whole offense. And then our defense just decided, okay, we're going to shut him down in the second half. And if they can beat us otherwise, then go ahead. And AJ Green only scored 2 points in the second half and they were both free throws. So. You know, there was adjustments made and defensive strategies changed. And in addition, our offense just kept, rolling at a high pace. You know, this is honestly a surprise. I think as well as some of our friends were pretty shocked at this result. And on one hand, you can say, oh, this is a home game. They had a lot to play for. They should win by a sizable margin, maybe not 27, but double digits or so. But like this Northern Iowa team, just kind of seems to be putting it together. They struggled earlier in the year. AJ Green is one of the best players in the conference. They have some really great role players. Their head coach is great. And honestly, before the game, the way they were being interviewed and the way they were answering questions, they were pretty cocky. There was, I don't remember who. I think I do, but I don't want to say it unless I get it wrong. One of the players on Northern Iowa.
Sorry, that tweet lived in my head. I wish we saved it for when we play them at the end of the season, but yeah.
Yeah, he just said that, I think they asked him about like Loyola leaving or something. I don't know, maybe the question wasn't even related to that, but he said something along the lines of like, oh, are they going to the A-10? I don't even know where they're going. Well, wherever they go, I hope we can ruin their momentum or stop their momentum so that they can't do well where they're going. Something to that effect. You know, I don't want to rag on him too hard because at the end of the day, he's a college student athlete, right? Like he's still not a full adult, in my opinion. And it wasn't that horrible of a thing to say. It was a competitive athlete saying something that he probably shouldn't have said. But that being said, you know that if that's what he says in public to a media member, like, he's definitely talking crap behind closed doors with his teammates. And for that reason, that's why I'm bringing it up, because it was a bad look. It was something that caught my attention, and I'm sure if the guys were on Twitter beforehand, caught their attention. And it's just like an extra fuel to the fire for whatever. It's unnecessary. and then he lost a game by 27 points, and in which he played pretty darn awful. He did have 10 points, but he looked bad at times. So, I mean, it's just like, you know, it's just another thing that I think was an important context to the game. And we went out and won by 27 points. So that made me feel pretty darn good. Lou, what were some of your takeaways from the game?
Yeah, I'm not going to deny, right? I said there for player of the year, and he has not played like that. Again, early on, he definitely was, I think, a key part of our offense and key kind of facilitator. What I think put up the first three games, he put up 16, 18, and 14. And then he had a few other double scoring games there, but you hadn't really seen much consistency from him, in my opinion. But was I just completely in awe and totally happy about this game? And again, the commentators say it, but again, we all know Ahiro Glock has never been consistent from three. But this game and this year alone, he's been so much better. Like I have no problem with him shooting an open three because I know he's gotten better. And like contested three, I think it's always better for him to fake and drive, which he does do. I don't think he doesn't forget about that. That is something he thinks about. He does think about, hey, let me give a fake and I'll bring it to the ground and drive. But, his shots from three, he did not hesitate. And they were early, what, at least two or maybe three, all of three of his threes were from the first half.
Yeah, they were.
Braden's, all his threes and maybe all his points were in the first half. Lucas, I know two of them were in the, or three of them were all from the first half, and they were one of the luckiest and maybe the home bounces I've ever seen in recent time for him from three. But it was just that consistently early, just deep three was like, whoa, we are off to some hot start from three. And again, that's kind of nearly what our team is. Like, we live and die by three. We have a great game from three, then we're going to probably do well, right? If we have a poor game from three, we're most likely going to lose the game. But overall, just the consistency of shooting, what, 63% from field goal. I don't know. Maybe that might have been the best shooting performance we've had in field goal. A little bummed to see we only got the free throw line six times and we went 1-for-6. That kind of was like we're like, come on, guys, like jokingly. But again, I think that one of the – besides our just consistent offensive output – was just an interesting part of minutes, right? CK only played 18 minutes, which I was like, oh, I wonder why. And then I think the reason why is we went small. And Tate Hall put up 28 minutes, and I loved every single one of his minutes, to be honest with you. I think some of the fouls were – I don't know where we've called some of these fouls in this game. And I just blatantly confused – but again, three steals for him. One of the steals lead to a great transition bucket, which I thought he was going to dump off. I think maybe to some, I forget who was underneath, but he went to himself and drove. And again, he only put up 6 points, but it was just like, I loved all his minutes. Like I just saw his presence on defense and I always like his presence on defense. Right. So I think that's the biggest thing. Lucas with the 6 assists. I was like, man wants to put up 18 points and find 6 assists. That's crazy to me. And then personally, I think Jacob Hudson played some of the best consistent 7 minutes that I've seen out of him. Both his buckets were great. He took his time and he put himself in great position. He also had 2 assists because he wasn't afraid to like hand the ball off. I just, again, am confused of like what his minutes output is. Now, Tom Welch also had 7 minutes. So is that his 7 minutes? Because it was such a blowout, like I have no problem saying that. I was actually kind of bummed, and I tweeted out, I wish maybe with 7 minutes left, we saw Huddy and we saw Saint play maybe the last 7 minutes. I don't know. I was kind of hoping that. So that was just something. Again, we're critiquing a winning team of a team that won by so much. So it's a little bit of a blessing that we get to do this, but I think it's more of like, oh, I just wish, right? We're not really like, oh, they did something bad. It's just like, oh, I kind of wish in this scenario – Will Alcock decides to shoot from three every single game.
Yeah.
A perfect 1-for-1. So, yeah, it's one of those games that it's like, for offensively, you're like, holy crap, there's really no other words. Excuse my language if anyone's offended. But, like, really, I don't think against you and I don't think anyone else expected this type of performance, really. I didn't expect it. I expect – this is the type of performance I expect against Evansville, and we don't even get this type of performance against Evansville, right? Yeah. So that's the biggest thing. And then personally, I really would love to have heard what any coach said for the second half adjustments to AJ Green. Those last threes were so annoying to see. Like, there's no other way to say but annoying, right? AJ Green puts up one, and then I think it was Tuan Pickford, or it might have been Traber. I don't know who chucked up that. Like, that was a far three at one point. But for a guy to have all 18 points in the first half, it just reminded me of Cage Prim. And I literally was like, okay, are we going to make the adjustment we need to, like we did on Prim at Missouri State? And we exactly did. AJ Green only put up two buckets. And like you said, there were only two from free throw. So again, defensive assignment there. And again, this is really important. I think this game actually, in my opinion, is very important. Not only was it a battle for first, but this is our last game going into Arch Madness. It's going to be at UNI. So understanding who has a better feel for defense against AJ Green is a huge thing. Ahir was on him for a good bit, I think, in the second half. Lucas, of course, on him as well. But we saw Ahir on AJ Green when we played them, what, last year at home, right? Mm-hmm. So these are the type of defensive situations I really think are important to watch on tape. Like, I want these guys to watch the defensive assignments we had, because this game, in my opinion, is really going to be a crucial game going into Arch Madness, especially against a UNI team that already had shown that they were going to be top of the Valley, right? So really great offensive. There's no – besides make your free throws if you can. That would have been a great thing. But, again, 50-plus from three field goal percentage, and then 63 just overall field goal is just amazing. And then I think just defensive – assignments are great to see, and I think that's going to feed us. And lastly, T.Y. Johnson decides to play 10 minutes of decent defense. I know, Buck, I don't know if you got into it, but that was great to see. And then cherry on top for the victory cigar, Will Alcock decides that, hey, I'm going to chuck it. I don't care. And he makes a beautiful three that I loved watching. So great, great offensive around. And tip my cap to the fans. I didn't go, again, let's be honest, Super Bowl. I didn't think I'd have time to get back and everything, but I really wish I went, and I'm jealous. And maybe that's a reason why I may or may not be going to a certain game this week in a certain suburb of Indiana/Chicago to go watch our boys play Valpo. So overall excited, puts a grin on your face, made your day happy. But I think, Buck, I don't know if you have any individual assignments. I have a real question of, like, we didn't expect this performance, and, like, where has this performance been, do you think? But, again, if you have individual stuff to talk about, please talk about that first.
Yeah, I'll answer your question first. It's tough, right? Like, you go the whole season, you think you know a lot about your team, right? And then
you really do. You really do.
And then this happens. They throw up 85 points, which is what probably their second most points they've scored all year, besides Coppin State. Oh, they did score 89. Okay, never mind. But within conference play, they scored 88 against Indiana State. And I think this since is our second most.
Since our pause, really, right?
Yes.
This is like one of the best offensive, San Francisco, but best overall, I think.
Yeah. So, you think you know about your team, right? And then they go out and they do this. And I don't know if it's anything more than just people playing to their potential all at the same time. You know, there are games where we see where Braden goes out and hits, you know, five or six threes and finishes with 18 points. But maybe Lucas struggles from the line and Ugwak only finishes with 8 and 4 or something. You know, but in this game, you get everyone just hitting when they need to. People scoring in different ways. You know, Chris Knight, 6-8. And just great defense, too. I really think that, like, it doesn't come up in box scores, but how we changed our defense against AJ Green in the second half and forced him out of some shots to go along with, like, holding guys. Noah Carter can really rein it in from three. We've seen him do it in the past. He finished with 2 points. He has been a mismatch problem for a lot of teams in the Valley because he really isn't a five, but plays the five position for them. And we did an excellent job on him. So, you know, the offense, I think, gets a lot of the credit because of how easily you can say they did well and point to certain things. But this defense against Northern Iowa was really excellent. Guys were all over the court. Guys were diving. Tate had 3 steals by himself.
A big props to Saint for getting 2 blocks in 3 minutes, which was those blocks at the end of the game were just super fun especially the last one, the one at the very end of the game.
The way to end the game, absolutely, yeah.
It just shows his potential, on defense. But I think it just everyone playing up to their potential for me is what made this game look so differently. One of the other things I really want to talk about is the backup point guard position, T.Y. Johnson and Keith Clements, because I know that people have questions about this, and I'm trying my best to gather all the information I can about this. There are a couple things I know for certain. Keith Clements is 100% healthy. Drew Valentine has said it at least 2, if not 3 times within the past 3 weeks. Keith Clements is healthy. He got it on last week's conference call. He got it on today's conference call, the coach's conference call. And both times he has said Keith Clements is 100% healthy. It's obviously an issue because Marquise Kennedy's hurt. And when both Marquise and Braden are playing, it's not as obvious because there's almost no minutes where neither one of them is on the court. And one of those two guys is your point guard. But Braden obviously needs some breaks. And in this game, T.Y. Johnson was the backup point guard. It was actually, I didn't notice this, but I think someone at the game noticed when T.Y. came in for the first time with, I want to say, like eight minutes left in the first half or 10 minutes or something. Originally, Keith Clements walked to the scorer's table. And then when the substitution started, Drew apparently pulled back Keith and put T.Y. in. I don't know what that's about. I have no idea. I can't tell you. I can't be in Drew Valentine's head. What Drew also said during the conference call when they asked him about Keith and T.Y., he said that they liked the rotations and the matchups that they went with. So, reading between the lines, they liked whatever they saw for whatever reason. T.Y. Johnson playing defense, I'm guessing. I think that he's an excellent on-ball defender. At times he can foul probably more than he should, but that's a learning step in a freshman's development. And maybe they just thought, okay, we'll throw him on AJ Green for 2 possessions just to see what happens and see if T.Y. can get a steal and a foul, and then, maybe that's a net positive, right? And if he really annoys him, then that's good. Maybe we'll use it again. Another thing is just like confidence. I think after, T.Y.'s been on this squad now for almost a year, right? Like considering summer workouts and stuff, you start to know the guys more. And I hate to say it, but maybe there are some things that T.Y. just does better than Keith Clements. We've seen Keith for so long that we just think automatically he's got to be the better player, but that might not be the case on some offensive sets or some defensive rotations. And I think the last point I have is it just might be practice, confidence in practice, what T.Y. is doing out there. It's something we don't see, but there has to be something to why, the reason why Drew played T.Y. for in the first half in important minutes and in the second half, even before the bench came out. He was out there for 2 or 3 minutes again, and he picked up a sweet dime to Ahir, and then later got an and one, and unfortunately did not make the free throw, but, he played a good game. I was happy to see him out there. I know you were too, Lou. I don't think it's something we're going to have to worry too much about for all that much longer, on that conference call. Drew also said that Marquise is hopefully going to come back this week. That was his quote, was this week. He also said that since it's his hamstring, it's completely up to the medical staff to decide when Marquise can come back. He kind of joked that, like, oh, you probably saw Marquise jumping up and down on the sidelines, and the media guys all kind of chuckled, and he's like, yeah, like, he's feeling good. But there's a big difference between jumping a few inches while being stationary and playing college basketball for, 20, 30 minutes and cutting and driving and, being physical and all that kind of stuff on your hamstring. So there's a big difference there still. So hopefully he's back this week. I doubt he's going to be back for the Valpo game, but potentially he could be back for this weekend. I think if he plays this weekend, it's possible he might not play all of the remaining games after that, since we do have Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I think that's the rest of the schedule. Or if not, it's 4 games in 7 days. Hamstrings are tough. I wouldn't be surprised to see him come back and then maybe take a day off and then see how it goes after that. Just to make sure his hamstring is fully healthy going into Arch Madness and hopefully into the playoff March Madness or whatever postseason tournament. So that's kind of my spiel on the backup point guard position, because it really interests me. And it's a very important position, especially, you know, we do have the game against Valpo, which Valpo hasn't been great. But the game against Drake is huge. And if we don't have Marquise Kennedy for that game, it's going to be something that could potentially have a big impact on that game as the backup point guard position. So, Lou, I know that was a lot, but any like thoughts about that? I don't know if you had any questions or comments about the backup point guard or just how T.Y. played.
Yeah, T.Y. was interesting. Again, I don't know if he's just like he hasn't been tired, nothing, knock on wood or anything rude, but it's like he hasn't played maybe that much, because he always seems like he's got another gear ready for him on defense. Like, he's just always a gear up, and maybe just he's ready to go. I joked at first. I was like, oh, is he only in there because Bowen Bourne is, what, 5'10 on a good day? Yeah. But he wasn't only assigned to him. Again, I thought Bowen Bourne would easily be assignment for Braden. But, again, I don't know. I think it's my opinion is it's maybe not that Keith is not, like, again, Drew says he's 100% healthy. I think it's just maybe T.Y. has a quicker step. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it, and that's why I say that at next gear. And again, that whole point guard depth, we joked about how, I don't know if it's joking, but earlier we were like, oh, we have so much depth. And it's like, one guy goes down and you're like, okay, well, what actually is that depth right now? Right. Like, mm-hmm. Where is that line? And then again, we're like, is Swieger a guard or is he a small forward? And then Tate's coming in. Like, what is even the rotation there kind of thing? Cause it's like, we have so many different pieces. And then if Huddy's not coming in like that, that's the other thing. It's like Drew then is making it really maybe important to have maybe more than two or three point guards out there at one time, because we're playing so small, right? And I think that's kind of the question. It's like, okay, well, what lineup, right? And maybe, again, you're consistent with Ahir and Lucas, so maybe that covers two out of your five. And then Braden, right? So that's three. But it's like, okay, well, even for those minutes – 10 minutes Braden didn't play. Okay, who's filling in those 10 minutes? And Lucas didn't play for 6, and Ahir didn't play for 9. So it's like, okay, well, where are those minutes going? And T.Y. to play, again, if you look at it, T.Y. picked up all of Braden's 10 minutes he was out. So, again, I think it's interesting. I think also we're getting toward the end of the season. Maybe Drew also realizes he needs guys to get ready just in case. You don't know what the rest of the season comes. But also it's great to see T.Y. get minutes and get experience. That's, I think, also a great thing. That's where I'm a little sour about it. I wish I saw a few more guys get more minutes just because of the lead. We haven't had many of these games like this, right? Last year we did. We blew out Illinois State. We blew out some teams. Like, this is the first time since maybe Arizona State, right? Or I think I would say Arizona State if I look back at it. Yeah, Roosevelt, yeah, everyone got minutes. But let's be honest, Roosevelt, I wouldn't put in the same caliber. But since Arizona State, this is the first real blowout I've seen for us to get other guys in, right? And every Valley game is important, so the chance that we can get guys in, I think, is also great. So hopefully we get to see that with a few more games the rest of the way. And then also hopefully we show this performance the same way when we play at UNI at the end of the regular season. So excited about this game. Hopefully this game, though, puts a fire under guys and be like, why don't we do this the rest of the season? Because I think they're capable of doing it. And again, the biggest summary for me about this game was consistency by multiple people. Yes, Ahir and Lucas went off 17 and 18, and CK put up 12, right? Like, great numbers. But I think the consistency of play by everyone really just shows you that it's not just next guy up, but if you can have, again, the whole is by the parts, right? So all these parts that we can put together, that if everyone just be consistent with their minutes, it's just a great team to watch.
It is. It was just so much fun to watch this game. Watch them score 85 points and play great defense. My last kind of thought about the point guard or guard situation, Lucas Williamson has also picked up a lot of that slack, and I think it's, you know, one little thing that points to that is his assists since Marquise has been out. In the last three games since he went down, he's had, I just had this pulled up, five assists, six assists, and six assists. So a total of 17 assists over three games, almost, you know, just under six assists per game, which is much higher than his season average of 2.9. It just really shows, I think, that he has become, when we need it, a little bit more of a facilitator. I mean, he's still scored 19, 13, and 18 points in those three games. So he's still scoring, but also, willing and able to dish it off. And it just, I mean, I forget who, if it was Drew or if it was someone else who said, you know, I might have been Drew Shoes actually on Twitter, said that you could make a case for Lucas Williamson to be Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved Player of the Year, and Larry Bird, Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year. You could, I mean, there's a case to be made and some better than
there others. There is, yeah, yeah. No, I can see it. That's the thing. It's like the fact that you can even pause to think about it just show you the different kind of development he's done this year. I think offensively, absolutely, and a consistent offensively, defense has always been there. So it's so interesting that, yeah, the fact that I think anyone could pause and be like, yeah, you know what, you're right. We have seen a different offensive type of player from Lucas this year. So, yeah, it's a funny comment to chuckle, but then you're like, wait, maybe that's true, and I think it does hold some weight, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just another little tidbit, but this game was, like we've said, just fun to watch. I hope it carries over. I know they're not going to be able to shoot 63% from the field the next, you know, for the rest of the season, but even if they can take bits and pieces – and continue to just let this be a little bit of a fire under them to continue play like this, gives them some confidence, guys, you know, like Ryan and Ahir as well, who haven't been the hottest lately, both hitting a few threes. Just nice to see. And, if they can keep up either the offense or the defense that they played, I think they have a pretty good shot in most of the games going forward. So. So yeah, that's all I got. Lou, do you got anything else, or are you good on the Northern Iowa game?
I think we're all very happy about how that game turned out. So yeah, but yeah. Great game overall.
Yeah. So speaking of Lucas being potentially the player of the year, defensive player of the year, all that kind of stuff. I figured we kind of just chat a little bit for like 10 minutes maybe or so about end of the year awards. Usually we actually like will put out tweets or mention our podcast like in the halfway point about who we think would be on our list. This year just kind of got away from us, and also it's kind of weird because some teams had only played 8 while others have played 10 at one point. So now I think we're really, you know, there's most of the games have been played. Everyone's played at least 13, I think. Some have played 14. But I know, we briefly pulled this up looking at everyone's statistics, and we both are like, oh man, we kind of don't know who's good, right? Like, we know who Loyola's played and like who's had good performances when we play them. And of course that impacts like how we're going to think about it, but then you got to go and look at their season statistics. So let's just kind of start from the top, honestly, and start on our first team. And I'll start and just say who are the guys that for sure, I think there's no question at this point. And then we can kind of talk about some other ones. But for me, Isaiah Mosley has to be on first team. Obviously he put up a huge 40-point game against us, but he's had some other crazy games. For me also, I just what Lucas has done for our team is like no-brainer first team. And then honestly after that is probably where I start to get into the like, you could argue about a few different guys. So I don't know if those two guys are on your list for sure. And then if there's anyone else that has to be on your first team for you.
Yeah, I think those two guys for sure. Right. Isaiah Mosley, just one of the best scorers in the country. But then also, I think he's a key part of, without him, the team doesn't do as well. Lucas for sure. I think his offense has definitely picked up. So he's almost a better all around player, right? His defense is always there consistently. I guess, to be honest with you, right now it just depends on how standings finish.
Mm-hmm.
That I think you could give one or not give, for at least for a first team, right? I think the biggest one for me right now is Cage Prim. He's putting up 15 points a game with a teammate putting up 20. So points wise, I think he's up there. And then I think rebounds wise, he's second in rebounds. So I think he makes it to the first team. Maybe depending on what team finishes first or how other teams finish, I potentially could see someone coming off, but I'd say he's probably going to be a definite only for the fact that has he been on it the last 2 years or two?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Two. So I think he's just played at such a high level consistently that it's the same voters, so I think they'll vote him again.
Yeah, I mean, for me, yeah, I mean, Gage Frim is definitely on that next tier. I would say along with Gage Frim, for me, is AJ Green. Honestly, I might have AJ Green just like a tick higher than Gage Frim, just based on AJ, you know, being their main scorer and always consistent and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, for me, both those guys are probably on the first team. But like you kind of mentioned too, if Missouri State really falls off, if they fall out of the top three, I don't know if they get two first teamers. At least I've always said this. I'll continue to say this. I value winning above everything else. Obviously your individual performance has to be very good, but for me, and I know it's flawed, but that's how I usually will settle ties in my head, is like, who's on the better team? If there's a tie, you know, or a similar type player. Some of the other, I'll just throw out some names here that I could see for first team. Terry Roberts, on Bradley, I think is really good. And especially with them being very good, is someone that I'm watching and think he has a shot. Also from Bradley, Rank Mass, leading rebounder in the Valley. I'm not entirely sure. I can't see what he's outside the top 15 in scoring. But I know is, I think, averaging around like 11 points a game to go along with like 8.5 rebounds. Even though, you know, the times we've played him hasn't been like his best games by any means, but I've been following and just know that he's played extremely well. Cooper Neese for me, I has him in the conversation. But it's just, he's a part of Indiana State and they're just not doing so hot, to be bluntly honest. You know, I might throw Braden's name in there. For me, he's more of a second teamer. He does have the second most assists in the Valley, at 4.2. Terry Roberts is in first. And then maybe my last guy that I mention. Oof, I don't know if there is. I mean, I think Ben Cricky and Marcus Domask are in there-ish, but again, bad, poor teams. Maybe Domask gets the nod just because SIU is slightly better than Valpo. But any of those guys that I mentioned or any that I like forgot that would be in your conversation for first team?
Yeah, no, I think really no one I think you forgot. Like AJ Green, I think, is definitely going to go there. I don't think you and I is going to not finish close to the top. So I think he gets the nod, especially a former player of the year. So that gets me, at least for me, that gets my three. Terry Roberts definitely was a name I had. Right. So again, yeah, so you get, for me, you get Lucas, you get Isaiah Mosley, Cage Prim, AJ Green, and then Terry Roberts. So I think that's the five. Again, the way things might shake out might be differently. I think a name that just is so tough to see just because he's playing maybe great offensively. It just Antonio Reeves, right? Putting up second most points in the Valley. But again, I think that just outshines, gets overshadowed really, sorry, by just his poor team performance.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with like Cooper Neese is putting up great numbers, but Cooper Neese's team ain't doing that too well. So yeah, I think guys like Marcus Domask, and Ben Cricky definitely, I think, is going to be second team. And I think also Marcus Domask, just because I don't think Marcus Domask also has been playing at the level he normally plays at. But again, Lance Jones is up there from there. So I think maybe they've been spreading things out. So, and then the tough one, the questionable thing is like, everyone's like, well, where's Drake, right? I think Drake's been more of an all around team. It's been next different guys. I think Tucker DeVries is up there potentially with points per game, but also I think the team performance has been has been more spread out. There hasn't been one person. Like, Roman Penn is not the same, or like kind of that type of style they had last year, or even Tank Hempel, right? So it's just a different team, and I think that's because they have such depth with Tucker DeVries. Again, I don't even know if he starts anymore or if he is starting, but I know he was coming off the bench early on, right? Mm-hmm. So that's also a kind of an interesting thing there. It's like, okay, well, that's what they might do, right? Is that they might just continue with the way they're going. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a battle for just the battle for first is going to dictate maybe who gets what on what team. But I think there's consistency at least for four guys. And then I think I think Missouri State will get two guys. As long as they finish relatively toward the top. They finished third last year, and they got two guys on it. So, and funny enough, Cage Brim was not on the first team his first year. He was on the third team. So I was wrong there. But again, first team last year. So yeah, really interesting, to think about. But again, it could just figure out, well, how do you finish, right? So I think that's really what might come down to.
Yeah, and like, so obviously some of those guys that we mentioned who aren't on our first teams would be like in it for our second teams. Definitely, you know, I didn't mention a Drake player. I would think if again, Drake is in fifth place right now, but if they somehow squeak into the top three, I think that they get a guy in the second team. That's probably going to be Roman Penn. It could be Tucker DeVries though. And then you get, I would think, Braden Norris, but, you know, also Bradley has both Terry Roberts and Rink Mass, who I think deserve, I think Terry Roberts for sure is ahead of Rink Mass for me and deserves to be on that second team. And then you get those guys like Antonio Reeves, Cooper Neese probably, and then I would have to say Braden Norris for that fifth spot. But then, you know, going on from there, I guess, you know, there's the specialty awards. Not the teams, but player of the year, newcomer of the year, freshman of the year, defensive player of the year. And honestly, like, I mean, I do think player of the year, there's some contention and there's some discussion to be had. But I don't know if there is any discussion to be had for defensive player of the year. I don't know if there's any discussion for newcomer of the year. And I definitely know that there's no discussion to be had for freshman of the year. And I would think we would have the same three, but for me, freshman of the year has to be Tucker DeVries. Newcomer of the year has to be Terry Roberts. And defensive player of the year has to be Lucas Williamson. So I don't know if you see it any differently, but.
Yeah, I actually would surprise you don't have a tough, maybe a little battle there.
Okay.
I could potentially see newcomer maybe. Again, it's just so interesting how they do with the voting with teams. But CK, I think, definitely should get a look. Just because now that he's starting, that I think Terry Roberts, the fact that he's full starting, that's the thing, right? CK, I would have said sixth man of the year. But now that he's starting, I don't know how that goes. I really don't know what
I think he could still, I think he could still win that. He's only started five games.
Yeah, I just don't know what they count. I'm assuming, well, again, because it might be how many games had he started in conference, and majority of his games,
yeah,
he started in conference. So, but no, Terry Roberts, for sure. To be honest with you, I nearly forgot Terry Roberts is new.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Just because he's a typical kind of, Bradley player in my opinion, but, definitely been stepping up. And then again, you might have, I think there's really no question about Lucas. Yeah, it's going to be interesting with like six man, all that. I think those dictate some of those other awards. Freshman Tucker, I can't really think of another freshman who is, again, Tucker was top 100 recruit. Makes that difference, I think, to a team like Drake. He's even making that impact even show a lot more. So, it's an interesting one for sure. I think. Did we talk about most improved?
It is one of them, but no, we didn't talk about that.
Just a funny name, I think, needs to, and it's tough because I think he showed up against us a little bit, but I think it might go to Garrett Sturts.
Yeah,
for
that
the fact
could be
that
true.
He's averaging, I think, like 11 points. He's also like third, it looks like, in rebounds, and his field goal percentage is third. So, and he comes from a former walk-on, so I think it's a good story and stuff like that. So it's not like it's a good story and, oh, he doesn't play well. I think the most improved might go there. I know we said Lucas could do it. I just think that's what they'll do, just because hopefully, knock on wood, Lucas can't take home every award. I would love him to, but they don't really like to do that. But you never know. Again, they gave what? They gave Marcus Domas newcomer and freshman of the year. So didn't think that was going to happen, and it did. So and then funny enough, when Marcus Kenny got sixth man, I was like, wait, so does that mean he could have won freshman of the year? And so one of those things. But again, these awards, we'll see. I think it's Terry Roberts, right? Just a note, like, if, depending on how healthy he is, finishing strong could just dictate maybe one of his teammates getting ahead of him, or just someone else finishing. But I think we got a lot more games, not a lot, but we got a lot of games that can decide some of these things and how teams also finish. If Missouri State finishes toward the end, I don't think we should see two guys on the top in the top team, but we don't know. We'll see how it all shakes out the last few weeks.
And the last, I think, point or last question, player of the year, at this point, can it be anyone other than Isaiah Mosley, Lucas Williamson, and AJ Green? I mean, like, is there even a way Bradley could, I mean, yeah, there's probably still enough games left to be played, but realistically, Bradley does have a game still at Missouri State. They only have three games left. I just find it hard to see Terry Roberts sneaking into that conversation, even if they do pull off like some crazy thing and end up tied for first. I don't know. How do you see it? Is it anyone other than Green, Mosley, and Williamson, you think, for that award?
To be honest with you, it's really just Isaiah and Lucas and this one tier. Again, depending on how UNI finishes, like, I think AJ Green's name was talked about because the UNI was on the top. But I saw nothing against him, but I saw a weird graphic that had Antonio Reeves on, like, the bird watch. And I'm like, yes, you can put up 20 points, but you can't really get an award for all conference when your team is not doing so well. So I think that's one of the toughest things. But yeah, no, I think right now it's Isaiah Mosley and Lucas, with AJ Green definitely having striking distance, especially for a player who's won the award before. So, I think it's not wrong to mention his name.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that kind of is going to wrap up, we just wanted to kind of set the stage and talk about it ourselves, because I don't think we've really looked into it all that much, and we'll definitely put out our teams once all the games have been played, see how many we can get right. I think usually we don't do all that hot, so, you know, anything can happen, and, you know, there's still four or five games left in the Valley, so anything can happen. Lou, any last thoughts? Anything you're looking forward to, or is that all you got?
Look out for a very aggressive Loyola fan at the Valpo game. I'm trying not to get myself kicked out, but if the game gets as close as it did last time, again, hey, if I become an angry fan, I might get a tech on our team, so I don't know how that works out. But I think the biggest thing is we got to finish strong. I just think nothing against what we've done, but some of the losses have put a little bump in the road just for maybe at-large potential and stuff like that. And what this week we didn't talk about it, but we didn't get any votes in the top 25, which, again, I wasn't shocked that we didn't, but a shock that we saw our names as long as we did. And I think if we finish strong, we could potentially see our names getting back in there. I think that just helps us for finish strong the rest of the season and into postseason play, hopefully.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's going to do it here from Buck and Lewis Podcast 63. Thank you all for listening, and don't forget, always remember, go Blurs.